So just to be clear, in my household, I'm called Deputy Dog. None of this deputy mayor, mayor things. It's Deputy Dog, and I'll be Cindy Anderson's Deputy Dog for another year. Cindy's not here, but she's a fantastic mayor and also cares as much or more as the rest of them about climate change. I want to thank a couple of people, though, that helped me prepare for this presentation first. First in the back is Natalie Meyer, who's our sustainability officer. Natalie, if you'd wave. And then also Jessica, who's our water conservation officer, or the water maven of the city, wave. And then I believe Terry Cunningham made it in here. Terry, also wave. They don't know yet, but they're going to come up and help me answer questions at the end. But also here is former Mayor Carson Taylor. And we'll allude to it, but a lot of the things we've done in the last 10 years are because Carson started them. And so I want to take a moment and thank Carson. And one other thanks is that while it's shocking that I'm in my 10th year as a city commission officer, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that one of the best things I've ever done in the community is with tens of thousands of other Bozemanites is raise money for this library. I was the head of the Library Foundation. It was an honor to do. Paula Beswick is here. Wendy Lewis, dear, dear Wendy Lewis, a good friend of mine, and many others, thousands of others, work together to do that. So I'd like to give a hand to the library for all the fabulous programs. All right. And so enough clapping, and now on to the Dower information. And there's a lot of information. And so I'm going to try and cover some things. I know through questions or talking to, I'll stay afterwards, that we won't possibly cover everything involved with climate change just in Gallatin Valley, let alone the larger national issue, global issue. And information changes all the time. So I want to, everything we have is well documented. We can get you the sourcing if you're interested in something I point out, but I know that we're going to miss things, and just bring it up and be patient with us or raise it during questions so that we make sure to include it. So, as was mentioned, what we're really going to do is four parts. First, we'll look at home, what's going on here. Then we'll turn into what the city has done. As part of that third part, it was mentioned in the introduction, we'll have discussion what citizens can do from the city perspective, but then I'll end that, and before questions, we'll also talk about what citizens can do individually in their own home and things like that. So to start, I think even though it's not directly climate-related, it is climate-related, and that is, you may have noticed, we're growing. And so Gallatin County is blue compared to the state since the turn of the century. We're growing three times the population growth is the state, almost three times growth in jobs, more than double an increase in personal income compared to the rest of the state, and also a pretty hefty, and this is the hardest one to move, increase in per capita income. So Montana is outperforming the country, and Gallatin County is outperforming Montana. And so you end up with maps like this. Home. We are the fastest growing county by far in the state. Since the turn of the recession, so that includes several years, 07, 08, 09, where we didn't grow, the county is averaging 1,800 people net more in the county every year. So because we had some 0 years, it really means we've had some years of 3,600 and so on. And if you look compared to the other colors, there are only three that are even close. And sadly, the story of the American West, rural areas are actually shrinking in population. So Bozeman's seeing a tremendous growth. Here it is looking another way since 1990. Here's the recession where we flatlined, and lo and behold, we took off again. It's very healthy if you look at it from an economist or sociologist point of view. About three quarters of it is in migration, and a quarter of it is more births than deaths. So we're growing for every reason. People are moving here. People are raising families here. This is all net. So obviously, we know there's a big churn. People are leaving. So it's the net that we're growing by. We are one of the fastest growing counties, not just in Montana, but frankly, the whole country. And so that ends up with things like this. This is net job growth by sector since the turn of the century. When people say to me, what part of Bozeman is growing? I say yes. Because as you can see, the only sector that didn't grow is farm. This is countywide, and it's frankly within the margin of error. So this is pretty close to, so it held its own. Not surprisingly, professional and technical services, pretty high-paying jobs, real estate and rental, also high-paying, accommodation, not as high-paying, healthcare, which is more in the middle for pay, all growing phenomenally. So we are growing across the board and pretty consistently, except for that the Great Recession for us, which was a plateau, what was a trough for Bend or Las Vegas or Phoenix. For us, it was, as you saw, a plateau, and now we're booming again. And that means in Montana, of all the jobs created in Montana since the turn of the recession, Gallatin County alone has contributed to 27% of them. So we, as one county out of 56, are responsible for 27% of all the jobs created. The good news is if you care about climate change, you're going to see a lot of Senator Daines, Representative Gianforte, and we saw a lot of Senator Tester last year. They have to come here. The votes are here. So use that to your advantage. They must come here. You can't win Montana very easily without winning Gallatin County. Gianforte did it, but barely. So the point is, use that advantage of being an important county to do it. These counties together, five of them, account for more than three-fourths of all the growth. So Montana may become Oregon. Right now, if you in Oregon, if you win the I-5 corridor, or if you're in Washington State and you win King County, which is Seattle, your name is governor, or your name is senator. So it may be someday that if you win these five counties, you don't need to worry about the other 51. So politics may change dramatically in Montana because of that urban versus rural split is going to have a significant impact. Senator Tester won 13 counties. He lost 43. Governor Bullock won 10 counties. He lost 46. So that could, depending on what people do, change the politics of the area, in addition to the enormous growth that we're going to talk about some more. So home construction. Every red dot is a home. 1,900. Actually more homes than I thought, right? Here is 1990, probably what we think it is, but it's actually 26 years old. And here it is 3 years ago, 2016. Just look at the difference from here to, I mean, obviously this is the greatest, but it took 90 years. But in 26 years, we did this, which also means we did this. No county lost more open space in Montana than Gallatin County. No county lost more open space than we did. More than 86,000 acres were lost in those 26 years between the two. Our friends up in the Flathead are pretty close, but Missoula's not close. Yellowstone County's not close where Billings is. It's a big deal. We're losing a lot of open space, and we're losing it rapidly. And not surprisingly, wearing my city and my Headwaters hat, I would assume that's our growth is going to continue. This is what you could have been doing this morning before coming to the talk. We've got an incredible university that's growing. Skilled workforce, about almost 60% of adults in Bozeman have a BA or higher. That's double the national average. The workforce here is phenomenal. And we have an airport. When I moved here, there were four direct flights out of Bozeman. One was to Butte. The Butte flight's gone away, but somehow we've made up for it. We now have, and it's hard because Springer, who's the head of the airport, sends me an email, I think, once a week announcing some new flight, and we have more than 16 direct flights. It's phenomenal to me. I mean, you can fly to Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, you name it, you can fly there. And so that means that, back to this slide, looking it all together, it's likely we're going to grow. Our costs seem high, but compared to San Jose, compared to Austin, Texas, compared to Boston, just to take three across the country, we're still a screaming deal. I moved here from Washington, D.C. in 2001. People would complain about traffic, and I would just laugh and laugh. Now I complain about traffic. Right. And we are trying to, that's a different presentation for another day. So that's a really important background when you're trying to address climate, is that if we keep growing with this number of people, it's going to affect our efforts to conserve, whether it's water or energy or efficiency or how many miles we drive or how many buildings we build and so on, because that population growth just has to be baked into any consideration of what you're doing. So let's turn and let's get into some of the things that you came for. And Natalie's going to correct me later during the Q&A. And there's so many of these that I wrote down only a couple, but I wanted to be clear so you get an idea of what the numbers actually are. Depending on the scenario, we expect by roughly 2040 starting forward that we're going to go up between 4.5 and 6 degrees in southwest Montana. That means that the number of days that are more than 90 degrees will increase, not total, but more, 25 to 33 more days, 90 degrees or higher. huge, huge issue for senior citizens. My house doesn't have air conditioning. Many houses bought in Bozeman don't have air conditioning or in the county. It's going to be a tremendous issue. The number of free days, the number of days that don't freeze, will increase between 30 and 41, depending on the scenario, from 2040 to 2061, I believe. Natalie's not shaking her head yet. And shockingly, precipitation may go up by about an inch. It varies between just less than an inch and just more than an inch overall. It won't necessarily be spread out evenly. So we're going to have a lot of events like flooding, because the rain may be more severe. More likely, we're going to have rain on snow events. So a warm day in late March, early April, where the snow's already melting and the rain helps it melt faster. So that is an infrastructure consideration. We have an expert on water who could answer drought. We have a drought policy now as a city, because we're going to see a lot of rain, and then we may just turn off completely. We're probably going to have more smoke in our future from wildfires. The snowpack, we already know, is declining in volume. I talked about wildfire. And then those storms in the winter, maybe less frequent but more severe. So we're going to see some real adjustments in what we do. It's going to change agricultural patterns. We're a closed basin, so if we see less water or water at different times because of who has the water right, it's going to dramatically affect how we can use water, when we can use water, and things like that. So there's some real challenges ahead. In terms of where do Bozeman's emissions come from, not surprisingly, more than half is from buildings. 30 and 23% together, just more than half come from buildings. Just more than a third is from vehicle transportation. If you add in this aviation, and that's probably, that may go up, it'd be about 40%+ for it. And then there are odds and ends, water, wastewater, 0.2, just to make sure everyone knows that that's not an issue. But things like landfill waste, that is contributing. How we dispose of things, what do we do with it, for example, is contributing. So it's a tough conundrum. Here is basically our chart of admissions. The good news is that the total is lower. We've seen an increase in natural gas and gasoline. Electricity went down. In full disclosure, a lot of that is because Northwest Energy switched to using dams. And so this is a one-off savings that you can't replicate every year going forward. And so we've seen it's good news. And Northwest Energy, you may have all seen the Chronicle. They're bragging about it on a billboard that got profiled on the front page of the Chronicle, that they switched to a dam project. I think that's a good thing. But it's not something that we can count on replicating. So a lot of work is going to be up to us going forward. Here's a breakdown, and this is, I apologize for how complicated it is for those in the back. As we talked about, our overall emissions since 2012 are down slightly. Population is up significantly. Jobs are up. You can see the home energy use per person is down. That's a fantastic per capita household. It's a fantastic number. Residential emissions are down. Commercials also down. Not surprisingly, transportation is up significantly. And then waste emissions are up and per person are down, but up slightly in other ways you mentioned. So it's a mixed picture. It's considering the population growth we've had, frankly, I'm pretty excited about it. The fact that we can get per capita down in many ways, and we're going to talk with Terry and others about a stretch code and some things that we possibly could do to keep that going down. Because remember, buildings are more than half of our emissions in the community. And so that, in some ways, is part of where we have to go, in addition to electric vehicles and other things, to make a difference. And so let's talk what the city of Bozeman is doing to try and make some improvements. One of the reasons we do this, because I'm not an economist. I'm a history major. The economists put up with me. I always joke that if I formed a rock band, the Headwaters Economics Rock Band would be the Confounding Variables. That's a stats joke for any of you who know that. But they haven't taken me up on it yet. But not only is climate change the right thing to do, and the right thing to do for thinking about the next generation, let alone two or three generations from now, we have pretty good information that spending money today on mitigation, not necessarily producing energy, but adapting to the world as it is while we try and change it, is enormously beneficial. It has what businesses would call a good return on investment. Some are shorter, some are longer, but overall, there can be a good return in terms of savings if we spend that dollar as insurance or whatnot, that we'll save money as taxpayers or as citizens later on. And so all of those motivate us, doing the right thing, but also making sure that we're using your tax dollars wisely. And through that, here's a, and this is why I made sure to pull out Carson Taylor. Here are a number of things. Signing the Climate Protection Agreement, which I think Mayor Krause signed, if I'm not mistaken. A municipal climate plan, which I brought a copy with me if anyone wants to look at it and realize how far we've come in terms of planning since 07-08. I also have a copy of this one from 11. We formed a working group, which we'll talk about more, that meets on Thursdays at City Hall. That we can give you the dates and times if you want to come by. And then in 2017, I believe it was Carson Taylor signed Bozeman agreeing to the Paris Climate Accord. And I'm proud to say that the City Commission later voted unanimously to join the mayor in doing that. So I'm only going to touch on a couple of things, and then we can play Stump Natalie later. But we're doing a lot in energy efficiency. For example, internally, a number of projects that Natalie came to us, I remember a couple of years ago, we put a spreadsheet up on the screen at City Hall, and we basically passed any project that had less than a 10-year return on investment. So putting in lights, doing more heating, vehicle fleet thing. We did whatever we could to reduce our demand for energy, and we said, we don't care what it is. If we expect it's 10 years or less, we're doing it. And then we did several that had a longer horizon than that. And the point was, just get started. We'll find the money now for the upfront cost, and I want to be a good ancestor for the commissioners who come after me so that they have less of those decisions. They're going to have their own problems and things to wrestle with. Why should they inherit an additional one from us? So we voted for a lot of those. There are more things that we can do. We also, a lot of people asked the public safety building. It was approved in November by the voters. Will be a pretty resilient building. The way it's organized and the way it's set, I think we're going to have a sustainable building. We're trying to set a model. I talk to Rob Watson all the time about what else they can do for the current high school. There's a reason I mentioned working at the Library Foundation was so wonderful is because one day I answered the phone upstairs, and it was a donor on the line who said, what do you need to make this building LEED certified? And I said, a lot of money, and they said, done. And I hung up, and then FedEx? They FedExed me a check, and I walked down Main Street with a check for $1 million in my hand, terrified that I would somehow lose it into like a kid into the sewer system. So this building sets a standard for public buildings across Montana and, frankly, across the Northern Rockies. And we're working with Rob Watson to do more in that area. And we're also doing our City Hall was retrofitted. It used to be the library. When it became City Hall, we also made upgrades to it so that it was a more sustainable building. So there are a lot of things that we can do. Simple things like LEED lights to major things like a building renovation are all really important in terms of what the city is doing. So we will be updating, starting this year, our basically resiliency strategy, I'll call it. There are a number of terms, so I'm not going to, Natalie can tell us the exact phrase that we're going to use, but basically we're going to be updating our climate efforts this year to a great degree. And so you can see the objectives here, looking at the risks that we have, trying to educate, taking more of those tactical steps that we talked about. It's going to be a pretty broad effort, and that's one of the ways that citizens certainly can bring their expertise or just questions and get involved with us as we go forward. Some of the other things you may know is that out by the sewage plant, we have basically given Northwestern permission to put in a solar array. Go check it out if you want. We can set up times if you want to really check it out, see it up close. But if you're driving by in Frontage Road, look over there and notice it. It's basically a demo project that they've done. It's got a significant amount of energy that it's producing, and we're excited about it. And we have more land, and we may have others that have more land. We certainly have made it much easier through the code, which we approved a year ago, for people to put solar on their homes in terms of where they can put it, can they put it in a historic district, other things like that. We're trying to make it easier and easier to do a variety of sustainable and cost-saving things for energy. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about water for just a real quick second. This is our water use by month. What's different about these months? Who has a golf course on their front lawn? Apparently we do, because you can see green is single-family use. These, I believe, and I may get corrected, I think these 3 or 4 months equal the other 7 or 8 months combined. So we just the water use is phenomenal here. Other things, not surprising, like government, it goes up slightly. Commercial goes up because of the tourism. But we water. And so our water use is often at the time when we have the least amount of it. Because of what's happening. And that may be impacted by what happens back to what we said about those climate impacts, about when it rains, how much it rains, can we store the water, who has the water right. Montana, I think everyone knows the Montana Water Court is based in Bozeman. It It's not in Helena, it's here. Their decisions go to the United States Supreme Court. Water law is so important that it goes 1-2. And so often they'll have, in a sense, a mediator as the first step. It can go to the water judge. And then if it wants to be appealed, it goes right to Washington, D.C. It's its own law. It's its own system. And it's vitally important. And we're at what's known as a closed basin. So that means that technically every drop of water is accounted for. And the age of your right means when you can call on that water and how much you can call. And so it means you could ask for water and people higher up the stream, so to speak, have to let that water go by because you have that right. And it's an enforceable right. Water has not really been monetized yet in the valley, but it will be soon. The city's buying water and almost no one else is. But that's going to change almost certainly. And so it's going to become more and more valuable as we grow. One thing I want to point out is that right now, if you're going to build in the city, you have to bring your own water with you. So you either have to have existing rights to water on that piece of land or buy water rights. So people say you're going to outbuild the water supply. And it's like, no, we can't because we will not give someone a building permit unless they have the water rights in advance. That doesn't mean we won't reach a point where we can no longer give building permits because they can't get more water rights, but we require you to have that water right before you can pull your building permit. It has to be paid and demonstrated. So that's one way that we're working to check. Another little thing that is sometimes surprising to folks is that an acre of land in the city, residential or commercial, uses much, much less water than an acre of ag land. That's not a value judgment. It just is reality. And so we may see a lot of pressure to change ag because of the water becomes so valuable into residential, because that ag land is worth money as land, but it's also worth money because it represents so many acre feet of water a year, and often it has the oldest right to water. So there's, and under the state, you can't just do it. You have to legally change its right from ag to residential use. And so the city's looking at things like water banking and ways to store water right credits so that we can slowly change things from one to the other as necessary or to meet the demands for folks. So here is the picture of, though, given if we don't have massive more conservation, of where our current reliable supply, all three words are really important. It's current, what we know of now, reliable, so taking out some of the variables, amount, this line, population growth, this line, the year, 11 years, not too far, 2030. Not too far away. It may have been updated and be 1 or 2 years slightly differently, and we'll hear, but that's the point. So we have, not surprisingly, an integrated water resource plan. It's now going to be 7 years old. One of its foundational principles is conservation and efficiency. It's hard, at least when you start, on the energy side, conservation and efficiency are often the most effective way to at least get started. That's the low-hanging fruit in terms of using less energy, using less water, is to start there. At some point, you'll start to get harder and harder to do. We are a pretty good city in terms of how much water we use per capita. I want to give people credit compared to a lot of other cities, but we know there's also room to improve. And so we've got all sorts of goals. This was a great process because we formed what's called there was an advisory group that was made up of citizens of Bozeman that met and really got into the weeds and were tremendous help to city commissioners like me, I'm an expert on Spain in the Golden Age and German reunification. So learning a lot about water use was quite helpful for that. And it's so helpful that we have two slides for it. Everyone else gets one slide. We put two up here because we want to generate additional AF acre feet of supply, but these are all the challenges we faced in doing that. We're growing, we're a closed basin, we're going to have drought events. We were pretty arid to start with, limited supplies and whatnot. So it's going to be a huge challenge for us to figure out water. And it's going to be, the sooner we start, the less expensive it will be, but it's going to be expensive, period. There's just no way around it. And another part of that, just to touch on it, and I think we'll just note this and get back to it if people are interested, we now have a drought management plan. And so the first goal is to not have the effects of a drought, if we have a low water year, that we have the conservation in place and whatnot. But should we have a drought, we will find out ways to monitor it and then have a stepped program of response so that everyone can understand it and it's fair and it's known in advance of how we're going to deal with it
That obviously will be population, but also climate-driven if we're going to have some of those issues. Let's talk about some of the things citizens can do individually, but also through citizen programs. And so one of the big things, to stick on water first, is do things in your house. We will help you do things in your house to make your house more efficient. We've had a flush toilet program. How many toilets have we given, helped fund, roughly? 3,000 toilets, shower heads, clothes washers, urinal, you name it, we are trying to do it. We will come inspect. If you use a timed irrigation system for your yard, we can help you understand how much you should irrigate, but also is that system the most efficient? Those are free things that we can offer to folks. We want to help you lower your bills. So better, you know, the win-win. You're better for the environment, but you're also better for your household budget. The same is true for outdoor rebates, as we talked about. Rain sensors. Hey, it rained last night. Why is my neighbor watering their lawn? You know, we've all, you know, certainly driven down the street. It's pouring down rain. You're like, oh, my neighbor's watering their lawn. I've xeriscaped my yard. There are all sorts of options that we can take. We've changed the city code that you can xeriscape your yard. We, believe it or not, we used to require you to have grass. And we really liked Kentucky grass. Really liked Kentucky grass. And we're now trying to have buildings be closer to the street so that they have less landscaping to do. We're not requiring it. We're much more open to flexibility. So there are a number of things you can do on the water side. Certainly on the energy side, and Natalie can talk more about this. We're trying to help people understand how to use their thermostats better, the benefits of insulation. We can help you calculate return on investment. Northwest Energy has a number of programs that they offer, the variety of ways that you can reduce your footprint in your house. Because remember, buildings, structures, are more than half of our emissions overall. Commercial is a significant part of that, but so is residential. So anything we can do to help you with that, whether it's rebates, lower bills, or whatever, we would like to do to help you with that. And there are a lot of partners that we can help you hook up with to understand what you can do as well. The school district isn't on here, but I wish they were. They're not our sponsor in a sense of fiscally with us, but they obviously are the kids and having the next generation ready to come in and demand that. We all remember the young student who actually basically went to the school board and said, why don't you have solar on the school? And now they have solar on the school. That's a pretty powerful example. And so the more we can do with the schools as well, I think is something in terms of what individuals can do as citizens. Some other things that are coming up for us is that we're going to be looking pretty hard at transportation. Remember, if you combine, not the aviation side of it, but the transportation side in Bozeman is about 35% of our emissions. So we now, under the impact fees that we will consider on Monday night, which is part of the raise that if we grow, the developer has to pay impact fees. For the first time, we can use that money for multimodal, which is a fancy way of saying bike paths, bikes, buses. So we found a way under state law to make that happen. So now we can put in the downtown plan that was just released is looking for a two-way bike lane on Babcock so that people are more likely to ride downtown. So we're looking for a variety of ways, whether it's bikes, car sharing. We have a program downtown where you can, if you build an apartment complex, you can car share a car and get credit for more spots than just the one car. We're still trying to figure out, like everyone else, what that means, autonomous vehicles. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't know what it means. And so whether that is less driving or actually more, or it means more commuters, because if you can suddenly commute for a half hour but FaceTime with your friends and not have to pay attention, you know, commuting may go up because of the demands of driving go down. It's a more less onerous experience if someone else is watching the road for you. So we've got a lot of questions there. We also have a lot of opportunities here. As I mentioned before, Terry and others are working on what we call a stretch code. We would basically be incenting builders to build more environmentally friendly homes. There are real restrictions under state law of what we can require builders to do, but there aren't restrictions on what we can incent them to do. So we're going to look at a lot more carrot rather than stick, because we have to follow the law, and that's where the action will be. So we'll be doing that. We'll also be looking to see for affordable housing, because that payment for energy costs is such a high part of their rent. What can we do to make sure that that's built well so that those families in there that are very close to their paycheck meeting exactly their needs, don't have an unpleasant surprise in a really hot summer with a young baby in the house or a really cold winter and so on. So our group, and now, is it the third or fourth Thursday? Fourth Thursday at 2 or 2:30? Fourth Thursday, 2 p.m., City Hall is the meeting every month or close to it. We meet and we talk, and that group will be the ones that will be leading or certainly discussing a lot of things that I've just brought up, and there are many other things that we're doing. So a new a resiliency effort, looking at transportation, looking at building incentives and whatnot. We'd love to see you there. It'd be really important for you guys to come out. You don't have to come to everyone. You can talk to, I don't know, is there a email list before meetings sending out the agenda and stuff? So we could set up a way to facilitate that. Those are a small tip of the iceberg look at what's available in terms of what to do. And then here's my phone number. So everyone knows the joke, right? My mom calls this phone. We're not changing the number. So this is my phone, not the city's phone. But I use it for everything. And so I don't care how you get a hold of me, just get a hold of me and get a hold of all of us. And with that, I've talked for 35 minutes. And so we should stop and I think and have those broader questions. I will make sure at 1:30 that I take a pause if people need to get going. Certainly, everyone's busy, so I understand if you have to leave sooner. But there's so much to cover. I deliberately left things out, not because they're not important, but because we had to have a limited discussion, and I wanted to use almost as much time for discussion and questions as we did for that. So if my victims slash fellow city workers would join me, Mr. Cunningham, you too, that would be great.
Might as well just jump into the real deal. I'm not sure I have the best answer to that question, to be completely honest with you. I know that there have been conversations with Belgrade, especially with regard to wastewater, in terms of growth and making sure that we can meet those demands in the future. But beyond that, I'm not sure that I have.
This city water right, city of Bozeman water rights are pretty old. They're not close to the oldest, but they're pretty good. And like I said, we're the only active buyer on the market now, and it just hasn't come to it yet of coordinating, like the municipalities coordinating yet hasn't yet made fiscal sense. It's not that we wouldn't, it's just it would be a meeting to kind of say, we'll do that in the future.
We also do have, the city of Bozeman has a different water supply than Belgrade, and much, and all of the county really as well. So I think that's part of the reason that there has not to date been a lot of collaboration. The city gets all of its water from Highlight Reservoir, Sourdough, and then a little bit out of Lyman Creek, kind of near the M and the Bridgers. And so we use surface water and Belgrade uses groundwater. And so because of that difference, I think that's part of that reason as well.
To show that we are cooperating, I sit on something called the Planning Coordinating Committee, and we are, in the future, the City of Bozeman may sponsor a wastewater plant to the west of Belgrade. Now, that sounds odd at first, but it's downhill. In terms of where Bozeman is growing, the second high school that's being built will be working against gravity to send waste to the wastewater plant. And so the more downhill you are, and so it may make sense in the future for Belgrade and Bozeman, the acorns we collect, to put those together and build one larger plant on the west side of Belgrade, so it's downhill from everyone, because that extra pipe will be far more off than offset by the cost of the lift stations, which can run up to $2 million apiece, and they break, whereas gravity, gravity has never broken. And then the question was, for transportation, is there a significant difference between a short versus a long trip?
Natalie Meyer. Your question is about emissions per mile. So from an emissions inventory standpoint, we wouldn't be able to detect that difference. But I think theoretically, we know that shorter trips have more emissions per mile.
Repeating the question is, because longer trips cost more, have we thought about A, incenting shorter trips, and then B, what are we doing for the bus system? And so back to impact fees, for example, we have two areas in town around the university and around downtown. If people build there, because they'll have less wear and tear on our infrastructure, they actually get 30% off of their impact fees that they have to pay, because they're going to generate less demand on our system. So something would be similar. It's based on vehicle miles traveled, which could translate in some ways to emissions. In terms of streamline, the system is free. Terry and I were just at
Good timing. We were just at HRDC yesterday, and we're talking to the director there about possibly rebranding Streamline to understand that it's a system for all, but also understanding as we grow, what they offer now is far short of what's available for the area. And so the point would be, how can we make Streamline more accessible to that? The downtown plan, again, that I talked about, the bike lanes, is talking about having an every 15-minute bus that would go from downtown, then down Rouse to the fairgrounds, which where the parking could be, because the fairgrounds, except for the county fair, is pretty empty most of the year, especially during the day. Then come along 7th, which we hope to revitalize, and then come down Main Street again. And so that would be a subset, or in addition to, in a sense, the Streamline system. And it would just run, you know, 6:30 to 6 or some, and then maybe later, but less often. And so that's a way, because that's some of our most crowded area, that we could lower the traffic. It certainly would help with the hotels, for example, on 7th. They wouldn't be shuttling themselves, let alone all their patrons going downtown. And but the parking really would be the key issue. If we could park there, the workers could have that reliably, or even I might park there, just knowing that I can, within 15 minutes, someone else doing the work of driving, be downtown. And I suspect that would probably be free as well, or very close to it. And we have to figure a way to offset it. The question is, while we're talking about working with Belgrade on a sewage plan, I should be clear, I'll probably be very close to 6 feet under when that finally gets built. And so they can bury me in this. And then the second question, because of that, are we looking at what is often called Unigov? Indianapolis, for example, in the early 70s, the mayor there, Dick Lugar, joined the city with Monroe County, which is the county around Indianapolis, Indiana. And there are a couple other examples of that. I don't think that's going to happen here. But what is going to happen here is that when we cross 50,000 in population, which is most likely to happen at the decennial census, we will have a metropolitan planning area for transportation, and almost all, not all, but almost all of our road money for us, for Belgrade, and for the county will come because we every year show that we're cooperating and working together. It is the city's goal to house that staffer with the city because our departments are more developed, and our head of planning has an experience working with these, so he's a shoe-in to hire the right person and get that going, and that will force additional cooperation. About 8 times a year, I go to these planning coordinating committees of Belgrade, Bozeman, and the county. We're working on a donut plan around the city. The advantage of that is it would be much greater density. If we build right next to the city at city standards compared to the county standards, county right now you can have one house on 2 acres. The minimum in the city is 6 houses an acre. So it doesn't take, that's the minimum. So it doesn't take long to do the math of the difference. All the growth that we've had since the turn of the century, if it had happened in the city, if that had happened in the county, it would be 42 square miles of sprawl. So an effort to have urban density doesn't have to mean high rises, but 6 houses an acre are 5,000 square foot lots. These are suburbia lots or more, will really make a difference. So those are the kind of things we're trying to work on with our friends in Belgrade and the county. Do you want to add anything?
Thank you. So there are two ways we will work together. One is we will be forced to work together. And as Chris mentioned, with the new census breaking 50,000, we will have to work together, mandated, to develop a transportation plan, a mass transit throughout the region. The other way to work together is to work together. And there are encouraging signs in that regard. I know there's a misbelief that the county and the city don't work well together. Hogwash. Our street departments work incredibly well together. Our sheriff's department and our police department work incredibly well together. And we are trying to have and foster those relationships so on all forms of government we work well together. I'll give you an example. We are doing it's off topic, but we're doing an affordable housing needs assessment and action plan for Bozeman. And we reached out to the Gallatin County Commission and said, would you join us? Will you be one of those members of the working group? Because we want your input. Joe Skinner and Don Seifert and Scott McFarland are my commissioners. I live in Bozeman. Gallatin County covers Bozeman. We got to remember that. They are our commissioners as well. And they said, yeah, we're happy to join. Give us a seat at the table. We recognize that that discussion has far-reaching consequences. Count us in. And that's the type of cooperation that we want to generate on all of these different issues. Transportation, land use, that's already started with PCC, affordable housing, to combat and address the major regional things that we discuss. And your point is well taken. We need to plan regionally. We have to look at the whole, because it's not just a puzzle, it's a Rubik's Cube, right? It's one thing impacts the other. So it doesn't prohibit, it sets the rate. And Natalie will talk a little bit more about this. Chris was very kind when he said, I'm working on a stretch code. I'm having coffee with people complaining about barking dogs. Natalie is working on the stretch code. So the state sets standards about energy efficiency. We cannot require builders, and Natalie will correct me again, to exceed that. You can't say, oh, in Bozeman, you got to do better. So what would we like to do? We'd like to provide incentives, whether or not that's symbolic. This home is a, let's all make up the name right now, an Energy Star, well, that's probably patented, another, a Star Energy house. And if you live in a Star Energy house, that means that you are doing more than other people in, when it comes to energy efficiency. Is that enough? Or do we say to the builders who are actually building the house, here are some other incentives. You get, you know, faster follow through. You get, you know, some financial incentive, et cetera. I talked to Anders Lewandahl, who's with Swimbia. He's the chairman of their green building department. And they said, you know, we're not being asked by consumers to develop more efficient homes. We would if they asked us, but they're not asking us. Now, That's a problem. And so the goal is to have people ask for those and to have a substantial reward if that happens. And I'll pass it over to Natalie to talk a little bit more about that.
I think you did really well. But again, there's a state-adopted code that applies also to the indoor plumbing code as well. So we can't necessarily go beyond the state-adopted code for indoor water efficiency either. But some of the things that we're talking about is maybe waiver of some application fees, maybe just a recognition. Another thing that we could potentially do is require some sort of energy benchmarking at point of sale. So real estate agents have to list a score for a home. So there's a little bit more transparency in data, and that could help drive some of the consumer demand, but Terry covered it well.
Remember how at the beginning I made a political comment and said candidates are going to come to Bozeman because we're growing? This is when the next governor's race happens, this is one of the things to talk to them about. Let Bozeman set standards that work for our community. If we want, for example, the wildland-urban interface for making homes more resilient from wildfire, the state hasn't adopted it. Therefore, Bozeman can't adopt it. Helena tried to adopt it and they lost because the Supreme Court said no. Because under state law, they can't have that. Plumbing codes, energy efficiency codes. Give us, it's small C conservative. Let locally us, you know, you can throw me out of office if we do something you don't like. Let us have that flexibility. So talk to your gubernatorial candidates when they come through town. I think we have a great delegation that we send from Bozeman to Helena. I want to make that clear. But those statewide candidates are going to come in here, and it's an opportunity to talk to them about issues that are important to you.
The question was regarding using gray water to water your lawn. And these are hard water questions so far. Thank you. Yeah, so gray water is basically, traditionally it would be quote-unquote dirty water from doing dishes, doing laundry, and things like that. That in a lot of states, Arizona is a good example, utilities will incentivize residents to use that water, build out a gray water system to then water their plants outside with. Montana, that is, the regulations regarding gray water use are, it's a public health safety issue. And so, there isn't a lot of clarity around how flexible it is. And it seems to be that it's more on like a case by case basis. You would have to go to, my understanding is that you'd have to go to, the health department and request that, and they would deal with that, as it came in. In terms of water conservation incentives, the program is fairly young. And that's kind of been on my really long dream to-do list. We just haven't quite gotten there yet. So
I got elected 33 slides ago to try to, may not remember, but it was 2009. Carson remembers because we ran at the same time. Stop this. Not stop growth. Montana Constitution is pretty clear about property rights. So, it'd be nice for me to say you're not going to do it, but it's not going to happen the way the Constitution's written in the state. But be smart about it. Think about developing Four Corners as a node, having something halfway between Four Corners and Bozeman as a node. Therefore, I busted this report that Headwaters did, frankly, was done to support the vote in the spring last year for the open space levies. So that people knew if they voted for that, that was a chance. That's one way to control growth, right? The reason I'm on the Planning Coordinating Committee and why Terry supports me to be on there, and he'll probably be on it someday, is that we're trying to work with the county to have more rules. Because right now, as I said, if we build in the city, we know that we can save open space. But the county right now is pretty close to the excellent place without any rules. And so it is an excellent place. But you can have one house on 2 acres, or you could have 10 houses on 1 acre, and they're well driven. So their septic will fail eventually, and you can have growth. And so we have balancing issues. I often think about it as a planning trilemma, is that we want housing to be affordable because we're worried about people being priced out in gentrification. We also appreciate neighborhood character, that you mentioned looking like LA, that the neighborhoods look the same, but we also don't like sprawl and the environmental and social impacts that has. Well, there is not a community yet that has figured out all three that is growing at the rate we're growing. San Diego failed, San Jose failed, Austin has failed. Apple is moving to Austin, and they're saying they're moving to Austin, but they're actually moving 20 miles outside of Austin. And so it's a problem. And we have to address that and figure out how we can address all three of those questions, hopefully simultaneously, but have that conversation, because people will be moving here under the property rights that Montana has. We have a lot of say in how they move here and where they move, and that's the power that I think we need to control. They're moving here because it's incredible. I mean, it is the highest compliment to say that we like where you live. We just have to have an understanding of how we're going to work with that and what we want to look like in 20 or 30 years.
A great question, and thank you for asking the questions. Citizen engagement is really important, and it's important that it's a two-way dialogue. So thank you for posing questions about things that concern you. So we have a strategic plan that outlines what are the major goals that we want to tackle as a city, and we have action plans underneath them. We have action steps. One of them, if you look under strategic plan, talks about working with nonprofits and other organizations, governmental organizations, to decide not only where are we going to grow, but where are we not going to grow. How are we going to identify wildlife corridors, riparian habitats, other areas that are so critical that we're going to develop a plan that says not there? One of the other things that has been talked about and the city is taking a look at now is wetland mitigation. So right now, if you are a developer who develops a piece of property and there's wetlands on it, there are some options as to what you can do. You can work and incorporate those wetlands into the fabric of the project, and that's ideal. You can bulldoze it and fill it in, and you can buy credits from a bank for the Upper Missouri River Basin. And so you can ship those, you can buy credits in Twin Bridges and way up in northern Montana. Does that comply with the spirit of the Clean Water Act that says no net loss of wetlands? In the general sense, it does. Not here in Gallatin County. So one of the things that we have asked the staff to take a look at is whether or not we can require incorporated into the site, mitigate in Bozeman, or mitigate in the greater Gallatin ecosystem. So that's a small thing within the broader context of what you're asking, but the city is aware of that concern, and we are trying to be good players in that regard. Anything else to add on that?
Repeating the question, she lives in a condo association, And we have many people that live in homeowners association. Who lives in a condo or condo association? About half. I mean, and that's our rough guess is about half. And so those groups meet and form their own rules. As long as they don't violate public health and safety, speaking generally, the city does not get involved. And so we've had, for example, examples where next to a homeowners association, somebody wants to build something and the homeowners association comes and says, our rules don't allow that. And we're like, well, it's across the street and city rules do. And the city isn't bound by the homeowners association. So there's often understanding that way. But the other way is often the homeowners would be saying, we want to have immaculate lawns. You can't build your house with a Holstein cow pattern on the outside wall, or pink. And I think under Montana law, some of that, at some point, law may change and we may be able to require certain standards for plumbing or heating, as you heard. Most of it, I think, though, is going to come because these are small democratic organizations, small d, and reducing the stigma. Understand, like I said, my yard is Zeroscape. Having members of the HOA or condo association see that and say, wow, it's great to have a variety of yards. Or we really appreciate our neighbors having solar doesn't hurt our property values. In fact, it may help because if you want to sell your house and your solar panels on, it's more attractive to a future buyer. Right. And so, but I think that's going to come with the education and people seeing both the aesthetic question of, you know, how does it look, but also frankly the monetary question. You know, that they see that that's a benefit to their community and that their neighborhood, their subdivision will hold value longer because of in this sense, green is green. The environmental steps they've taken have actually made their neighborhood more attractive in the long run to future buyers, which is a part of the stability. So we can play a big role in that. Do you want to?
Just one follow-up. It has been my observation, having been associated with homeowners associations, a couple different neighborhoods, that there is the golden template. And the golden template is that thing that when someone's developing a neighborhood, they say, get me the covenants. And the covenants look remarkably alike from homeowner association to homeowners association, and it's implemented. And generally speaking, there's a point at which the developer turns over control of the homeowners association to the residents. It's at that point that I think now homeowners associations are a group of like-minded folk who happen to live close together, each of whom can change their rules. And so going and saying, you know, those covenants might have made sense 5 years ago, but are we really looking at the future and forming a citizens group to say, can we take a look at the covenants? You have that ability because you are members of a homeowners association. And what do you need? You need half of the folks to say, we want to do that, or people to listen to you. So these are not things that are written in stone. You are citizens of your homeowners association, and you can change those rules.
I might just add one thing. So I have heard this a lot as the water conservation coordinator for the city, and it is true, Commissioner Cunningham said, it seems to be that there are a few sets of covenants that get recycled throughout many different HOAs in the community. And while our code does not allow us to basically dictate what may or may not be in an HOA covenant, our division is happy to meet with your HOA, to meet with the person who manages your irrigation system in your park, any of that, to the extent that we can provide data on cost savings or just resources on how to improve the efficiency or how to maybe take out some of the grass and put in some drought-tolerant plants, we're happy to do that.
Question and comment was about transportation, but thinking about it not just in a regional sense of Gallatin County or Gallatin and Park County, but a larger region or even nationally, and a lot of discussion about how it's very hard to get here, if not almost impossible, to get to Bozeman using mass transit from out of state. So California was the example used. And something that, in a sense of what can Bozeman do to work with national officials or others to make sure that there are options like that available. And that, I think that sums it up. Something?
Excellent question. We are analyzing all of that data right now, actually. We have a big enough number of people that have participated to actually maybe see some sort of reliable savings. And I don't want to speak too soon in terms of what that number is since we haven't finished, but we are working on a program update right now, and that we'll have all of that information in there, and we're hoping that that'll be finished by March, April, and all that information will be available on the website. But all that being said, I would guess that around 20%. Did you have a watering schedule recommended and implemented? Okay, so that should help. I think if you did some retrofitting to your system and then also adjusted your schedule to potentially bring down those run times, 20% is kind of what we're seeing right now. So,
soils guy. One of the things that we're working on is actually basing our emissions on the soil profile. So what is the net loss of developing in a fertile area versus, you know, gravel till. So that's something that we're, it's a great question. And in the past, we have worked on an anti-idling campaign. We focused a lot on school zones where there's vulnerable children breathing a lot more per minute than adults. And within city operations, we have a no idling policy. It's actually illegal to turn off your car in traffic, so we can't recommend that per se. But what we have talked about doing in the strategic plan is to begin more robust air quality monitoring, which is really the first step before we could ever require emissions testing down the road. So we're working on it, but it's something we need to partner with Gallatin County on.
I believe that Montana is one of four states that does not require vehicle emissions test in order to get a sticker. How many people, if you moved here, did you move from a state that had mandatory vehicle emissions? So would you say that that's the most onerous thing that ever happened to you? It was awful. Cost you thousands of dollars. None of that. Yeah. So there are times when we want to do things as a city, and we explore the code, MCA, Montana Code Annotated, and you feel at times like you're digging a tunnel to an escape route that you are sure is there. And you get to that escape route, and you notice that there's a grate, and there's a lock, and it says, not so fast, locked, courtesy of the state of Montana. One of the things that we need to do is find better ways of making sure that we as Bozeman residents have an impact on those decisions that are made on a state basis. That's an ongoing struggle for us. But when you see the population numbers of who is growing and who is not, that is a helpful sign for Bozeman is all I'll say. Excellent point. And so there are three things you can do to enforce your codes get compliance with your codes, to have your dogs on leash where required, and to have them pick up the waste, which is also an issue related to wildlife. You can educate folks. We have signs like you would not believe. We got the signs. You can provide the resources. We have Lend-A-Leash kiosks sponsored by the city. We have dog waste receptacles sponsored by the city. And I'm talking about just inside the city. I'm not talking about Forest Service property because you're talking to city folk here. The missing portion has historically been enforcement. If you are driving down the highway and you know you're not going to get a ticket, you're going to start creeping and creeping and creeping. That's what's happened in Bozeman over the years. It's because of the lack of proactive enforcement, folks don't carry a leash and they don't carry dog waste bags. We just added this fiscal year, starting in June, a second animal control officer. It's the first time in Bozeman's history, I believe, that we have had two animal control officers. We are starting to get anecdotal information, and we're starting to get citation information indicating that we are starting to change behavior because people are seeing animal control officers in places they've never seen them before, on the Sundance Springs Trail park there, in other places. Friends anecdotally are coming up to me saying, I got a ticket. I got a warning. I'm walking the Sundance Springs Trail, and somebody says, there's an animal control officer up there on the left. Like, I have my dog on a leash. Thank you for pointing that out. So we are trying to address that. We recognize that this is an issue, and we'll be monitoring what we get in terms of two full-time animal control officers and see if more are needed.
So the question was that much is changing in both land use and water use across the country, and for us, especially the Intermountain West, and how are we using that to model it? And I think is key. I want to learn from my peers. And so my own benchmark of peers would be Bend, Missoula, Durango, Flagstaff, and probably Fort Collins, although that's a little close to the greater Denver area. And so these are cities that aren't close to, and so Bellingham's not on the list, although it looks like us because it's so close to Seattle. They're growing. They have an education component. They have a high tourism recreation component. And they face a lot of the challenges that we face in terms of how much rainfall they get, temperature change, having four seasons, and things like that. We certainly would look at anyone else comes to it. And we look for both successes and failures. Because Tucson would be an example for water. Pretty much considered the gold standard, I think, for aggressive water campaign. Obviously, the University of Arizona is there. It's bigger than us, but there's a lot that we can learn from there. And so we will continue to do that. Nobody likes to fail. And so if we notice that, say, a Bend or somewhere else tries something, and there's a reaction from the citizens, we may try it, but modified or with better education so that there's an understanding of what's going on. I think that's faster. It's more efficient in terms of time used, and it's more likely to be successful. So it should be a winner many times over if we follow that. So what our peers are doing, and to be honest, we hope to sometimes be leaders ourselves, that we do something that other people come. And so every year, for example, a number of Utah cities come up, and I always make a point of meeting with them because we give them presentations of what we're doing, but their planning department, their sheriff, et cetera, now call us, and we call them to share ideas about what's going on.
I might just also add that the water conservation program was basically developed largely with influence from, you know, Tucson Water, other programs like that, figuring out what works, what doesn't work. And I just wanted to add, too, that the city does prioritize data-driven decision-making. So, you know, we're trying to follow in line with some of these successful water conservation programs, for example, and we're also measuring our effectiveness. So we don't just run blind thinking that this is working well and then come around later to see, oh, wow, the numbers really aren't that great. And so we're constantly keeping that in check and monitoring that as well.
You spend a lot of money and time having a robust public comment process. And so we're, for example, updating the community plan now, or the strategic plan that Terry mentioned before. The strategic plan was a 2-year-plus process with, I think, 40-plus different meetings, both at different times, but also different parts of the city, and very clear that you could come in and talk about anything, from being a welcoming community on one side to how do we build parking garages, you know, on the technical driven on the other side. And so you publicize that with free media. We hired a public information officer for the first time in the last year to try and reach younger folks, because sadly in city elections, younger folks are not voting at the rates that we'd like to see them vote. Older citizens are, but the younger folks aren't. And so to reach them on Facebook and Instagram, I believe it or not, have a Twitter account. I'm still kind of laugh at the typos I make on that account, but I'm trying. And the point is that it's 100 different things together that hopefully gives them the opportunity. We know a lot of people are going to say there's a public meeting, my kid's sick, I can't go, but I want them to know that they had that opportunity. But hopefully they knew 2 weeks in advance so they can always sit down and write Terry a letter or call me on that 581-4992 phone number. Because we make the challenge for me as an elected official, I want to make sure Terry has a chance, is to take 100 opinions and say from that, we're going to make 3 decisions. And make sure that those other 97 knew that they were heard and that they come back the next time. And they don't say, fudge with it. You know, what's the point? Because we can't honor everyone's point if they sometimes directly conflict. But we can know that let them know they were valued, that they were taken seriously, and we made a better decision because they commented. So that welcoming environment and that opportunity, that time that they need to engage are 2 of the key points. I think Terry will probably have some others to make sure that we have that robust process.
Yeah, participation in all of our plans is key, and letting your voice be heard. It is important that when we make decisions, we make it based on input that we hear from folks, as well as the data that we receive. And so the data speaks very loudly to us about what's happening. A lot of the slides that Commissioner Mell showed are data-driven, and that's the building blocks for how you make decisions. So input is absolutely key, and data is key as well.
Streamline is noted for MSU students and people that can't afford a vehicle to get around. The reality is, as we move into public transportation that's going to be meaningful on the climate, we all have to ride it, and we have to look at it. So my challenge is to everybody in this room, figure out where you live, figure out where the closest Streamline stop is. Get a schedule. You can get it from HRDC or online from Streamline. And next time you're going to go somewhere, downtown or MSU, and you would drive your car, take Streamline. It's not that hard to do. It's actually very convenient. And if everybody in this room did that, half of you would end up doing it more. I do it all the time now. You have to walk to the stop. That's actually not bad for you. If you want to ride a bicycle, you can ride a bicycle and put it on the bus. The bus is equipped for that. So that Streamline in 2020 is the whole of the cities. We're all riding it so that the next iteration, once we're over 50,000, will reflect all of our needs. I think it will really be an important thing. So I'm going to encourage you to do that.
When does save emissions if we use fuel cell city buses instead of what we use now? I have they don't make a single sound.
Yes, and it's mostly, and we've talked to Streamline about this, it's mostly a matter of budget. The students in Bozeman are the biggest funders for Streamline. Belgrade, for example, puts $8,000 a year in. We need to work with the county because they don't put any money a year in. And so it's important to have a community input, because with that community input, we can have more lines and have those lines operate more efficiently, which would have savings regardless of what kind of bus, but especially if we could get better performing buses.
I just wanted to comment that we are looking actively at all electric buses. They're nationally and internationally just becoming much more prevalent, and I think the industry is going to be overtaken completely by electric buses, not so much fuel cells. We don't have the infrastructure here, it doesn't work as well in the cold climate, but proof of concept with electric is there, and we are pursuing grant funding, and I think there's a good chance that you will see an electric Streamline bus in the next few years. Missoula has 6 already, and it's happening.